today in my face, I was looking in the mirror or something, and I was just like, oh, I actually do look a little bit different here.
Mm.
It is 8 kilos down, so it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, 8's a lot.
So here's comparison.
Oh.
Definitely. Fuller in the cheeks on that side,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. And you also, the same thing, like you...
Yeah, I can see here, it's less, I have less of a, like a hamster face.
Fifth injection, going up to 0.5 milligrams, 36 clicks. Charlene and I have been on Ozempic for 4 weeks now. It's time for a one-month check-in and an interesting conversation about a big topic around Ozempic. Stigma. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Ozempic Diaries. I'm Jonathan Vanka, your host, and I'm with...
Charlene Armstrong.
Also your host.
Your co-host.
Oh, yes, there's a term for that. It's called co-hosts. Right. This is the first time... No, the second time I've ever co-hosted a show properly, so it is a little bit strange for me. But, yes, welcome to week 4. We've now been on Ozempic for 1 month, and this episode is going to be a little bit of a catch-up as we talk about our experiences from the beginning till now. And also, we're talking about going up a dose because we've been doing 0.25 milligrams, and now last night we went up to 0.5 milligrams. So, first of all, hi, co-host. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. And you, Jono?
Very well, although I suspect slightly better than you. This morning on WhatsApp, you let me know that the 0.5 milligram dose does have a side effect. How did that go?
Well, I felt, and again, I don't know if it's all in my head because I'm being so critical of what's happening in my body. I was off to a meeting and before the meeting, we were sitting down to have breakfast and I'd only had a coffee and my usual water for the morning. And I sat down and I couldn't look at the menu because I was feeling not nauseous, but so full as though I'd just eaten a massive meal and I can't even sit. I feel uncomfortably full is how I felt.
Wow.
And, that it can, and I remember feeling that way when I first started the Ozempic. Mm. So then when I started thinking about it, I was like, okay, maybe it's because I've now, it's the first week of the new dosage. And I remember in the first week of starting on the lowest dosage, I did feel that, but only for the first week. I got better during the passing weeks. So I imagine it has to have something to do with that.
Going up to 0.5 for me as well, I had, when I went to sleep, because I took it right before kind of bedtime, as I was going to sleep, I felt that kind of weirdly semi-stoned feeling, I suppose. It was very light, and I can't be sure if it was just like sleepy, but it did feel like I'd had a couple of drinks or something. Nothing intense.
Major.
And then, nothing major. And then this morning, as I was saying to you before we started rolling, it's hard to tell that I'm on Ozempic, to be honest. I don't have that, oh, I'm so full feeling. I just feel normal. And I'm, as you say, psychosomatic. I'm not snacking. I'm eating smaller meals. I'm eating healthier and it's easier. But I'm not sure if that's because I believe I'm on Ozempic or someone just like slipped some placebo into the pen. It's really hard to tell.
John, it's me, John from the future. It turns out that 0.5 milligrams of Ozempic does make a difference and is working because not 6 hours from now, you have a meal and feel really, 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 really full. Okay, bye.
And what was injecting yourself with the 0.5 instead of the 0.25 like? Was it a little bit scarier?
I was a little bit nervous just to make sure that I don't count the clicks wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it did take a little bit longer to count down. So holding the needle still while you wait for it to count down was a little bit nervous of that. But I managed fine. It didn't hurt. And I'm not so nervous about the prick with the needle anymore. I have to say, though, as far as the needles go, I only got 4 needles in my box with my pen. And obviously, my pen's lasting me longer than 4 weeks. But I started out using 1 needle per week and then discarding of the needle. But then I realized I'm going to run out of needles. So I went back to the pharmacy and said, can I have some extra needles? And that it's a chain pharmacy. So I didn't go to the actual one where I picked up my prescription. And he said they don't have Ozempic in stock, but they do keep needles. It's just he's not so sure what size needle they use. So he sold me like 5 extra needles. And he said that you must use one needle more than once if you're the only person using it. And so I was like, okay, cool. I bought the extra needles, got home, opened them. It's an 8 mil needle and not a 4 mil needle, which is much longer than the other needle. So I won't be using those because they seem scary. I don't think I'm going to prick myself with that. So I'll go and look for four mil needles for next week's injection.
That's also something that I just didn't pick up from the instructions or from my GP or from the pharmacist that you are. I got the impression that they're once off because they come in a little bucky that you pull the lid off and then you put it in. And the instructions are very much like discard. They actually literally say discard the needle properly, properly in the instructions. So I also have now got opened the second pack and I'm going to keep using that first needle now for probably another 3 weeks or so before I before I change.
And then if any of our listeners are wondering, so what I did was I have alcohol swabs that I wipe the skin before I inject every week. I just take a little swab, wipe the area where I'm planning to insert the needle. And then when I'm done injecting, I take a fresh alcohol swab. Be careful not to prick yourself. And then I wipe the needle with the alcohol swab after I've pricked myself. And then I put it back into the packet, the little bucky or the little container that it comes in so that it doesn't get contaminated.
Oh, I've just left it on the end of the pen and closed the lid on the pen.
Oh, so
we'll see who dies
first.
You're
going to reuse it.
Also, for the listeners, we haven't properly explained what the pen is, what it looks like, because I was listening to another podcast about Ozempic and someone mentioned that actually the expensive bit is the pen. It's quite a piece of technology. So it looks like a kind of an oversized pen with a lid that you pop off and it makes that sound that you'll hear at the beginning of our introduction.
And then it's like a inside permanent marker of sorts.
Yeah. Like a slightly sleek line permanent marker.
Yes.
And inside the thing, it's got a back half and a front half. And the back half has got a little counter with lines on it. And those are the clicks. So you rotate the pen in different directions and it creates clicks. And you do 18 clicks for 0.25 milligrams, 36 for 0.5, and then 72 for 1 milligram, which is going to be an experience. And in the second half, the front half of the pen, you see kind of a little see-through transparent window,
liquid
which has
window.
Got the actual liquid window, right? Exactly. and when you initially open it, there's no needle, of course. You take it out of its packet, you screw it onto the front of the thing. And the top of that little window has got kind of a membrane, which the back half of the needle penetrates as you lock it in. And then if you take the needle out, it actually sort of self-seals. So there's some interesting material science going on in there. But you screw it in, you do a test to make sure that liquid is coming through. I think you have to do a single click or something, and then it makes a little bead of semaglutide at the top of the needle, and then you can see that it's coming through. And then you do your 16 clicks, you stick it in your tummy, and then you press the button, and it clicks down. And that's that clicking sound you hear in our intro. And then you hold it for 5 to 6 seconds before you withdraw it. So two things happened to me when I injected myself last night. First thing is 0.5 is obviously double 0.25, but it's also the first time I've seen the plunger kind of
go down.
Appear from the back half of the pen. Yeah.
Yes.
So now the plunger has become visible as it's being used up.
In the clear liquid window.
And
because
the second
it's
thing,
pushing the liquid forward. Like it's
forward.
The liquid
yeah,
is becoming
less. Yeah, just like
less.
A disposable fountain pen or something like that. Right. And then the second thing is that I totally forgot about the 5 second thing. I just jabbed myself, depressed the thing, and then pulled it out. And then I was like, oh no, I missed the thing. And you know, anyway, I don't think it's going to be a train smash, but it's funny how trying to record something and do the thing at the same time makes you bad at both.
I was wondering about you because you record it when you do it. I've only just injected ever. So I did at one point, not last night, the previous time I did it, I was like, how does Jono record this while he's doing it? There's a lot going on yet.
I have to put the mic up to max and pinch my belly fat, point the mic at my tummy, and I have to do it like right next to it. And it's all in the greater pursuit of authenticity, you know. But yeah, once we get to, well, I'm going to get to 1 milligram. Your prescription, it tops out at 0.5. So it'll be very interesting to see whether you have the same, because we definitely saw diminishing gains from 0.25 in the fourth week, third the week, fourth week.
For sure.
So yes. It'll be interesting to see after a month on 0.5 whether you are feeling like, oh, it's not really working as much or not. So yeah, that'll be interesting.
I definitely, and also my prescription is for 6 months. Yours was for 3 months. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Mine is a lower dosage over a longer period, whereas yours is a higher dosage over a shorter period. So I'd be very interested to see.
Let's talk about results because it's now 1 month down. I don't know who's going to go first. You go first.
You go.
What were your results this? Okay, fine. No, you. Okay, so I started, as we all know, as everyone knows, because they obsessively listen to every episode of the show. I started on 98. I actually started at the beginning of 2025 on 102. And before I started Ozempic, I was trying to get all my habits in line and get healthy. So I actually lost 4 kilos before I even started. So, but since Ozempic, which is 98, I'm down to 94.7. So 3.8 kilos, so just under a kilo a week over the last month. But in total, I'm down 7.8 kilos since the beginning of the year, which is funny because we've just gotten onto this recording platform and it's video, we're only recording audio. But upon seeing Charlene, I was like, I can see the difference in your face and you could see it in mine. It's quite hectic.
Yeah, I mean, and we were joking with each other, are we going to have Ozempic face one of these days? But hopefully it's actually not the Ozempic face, but it is just us becoming leaner.
Weight loss face. That's what it is. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, weight loss face. Yes. And that we won't look like Skeletor and his cronies one of these days.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's a good, that even for the weight that you lost before the Ozempic, like, well done. I mean, that's, I'm super happy for you. And don't you feel better in your skin, in your clothes?
I do. Absolutely. My clothes are fitting better because I was buying clothes for me is kind of, it happens quite rarely. So I don't just go, oh, I feel uncomfortable, let me go buy a bigger shirt. I have to be humiliated publicly for me to go and then buy another size of shirt. There's a few things that I am now fitting back into, although marginal, but all the stuff that I was wearing that I was now had gotten to the point of uncomfortability where I was like, okay, I need to change now. All that stuff is now comfy. So that's great. So yeah, it feels good. I feel good. Energy-wise, I'm good. I think that's also just the regular gymming and the better eating and the lack of alcohol. So, you know, I think those do have obviously their own effects. I am in the couple of times over the family weekend, family day for my kids pre-primary, I had to run a couple of places and I felt less wobbly when running, which is good. Feels a little bit more toit, I suppose, overall.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm super happy. I think that it's very tempting to want to have lost more faster, especially as we've mentioned, you know, in since we're doing this in the public eye. So having lost just under 1 kilo per week is easy to feel like a failure. But I actually, especially in the light of the whole like loose skin thing, I've got to hang on to that. That's fine. Slow and steady is going to win the race. As long as it's consistent and it doesn't taper off to nothing, then I'll be frustrated. But if I do a kilo a week for 12 weeks, then I'll be overjoyed. That's great. And I do think that it gives your body time to adjust to that shift. And hopefully,
yeah.
I mean, I'm 45. I'm probably going to have some loose skin. I have to deal with it. But that's, I was joking with friends over the weekend, like that brings up Ozempic Diary season 3, which is going to be all about testosterone replacement theory and getting jacked.
Yes. Like, how are you going to fill out that body again?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So enough about me. Tell me about your results for this week, for the month, and how you're feeling.
Okay. Yeah. So I started off at 86.9 at the beginning of the month, and I weighed that morning before I did my first jab, and then I stagnated a bit during week 2 and 3. But this morning when I weighed, I am down to 82.1. So it's 4.8 kilograms in total from when I started, which I think it's a significant loss. But if listeners go back to the earliest episode, they'll hear that in my first week, I made the biggest drop and then I
yeah, 4.1 kilograms.
And I was a bit nervous there because I was like, I don't want to be losing weight this fast. I'd prefer for it to go slower. So I'm happy with where I'm averaging out now per week. That's it's a good amount for me, and it's more comfortable. And I've also been in the gym consistently, and I won't say that I feel like I have energy, but I do have an underlying iron deficiency, and I think that's just going to be the way it is. But mentally, I do feel better just because I know I'm taking action. I'm doing the things. I'm going to the gym. I'm making the conscious choices to do better. And and gymming, I mean, I'm super tired. Come 7 p.m. after the weight training in the week, I am mugh. But I sleep better. I've been sleeping better, which I'm grateful for. My skin's looking good. I don't fit into my gold jeans yet, but I have to lose at least another 5 kilograms to be able to fit into those, I suspect. But clothes are starting to feel more comfortable. I feel more confident in my clothes. So I'm happy. I think it's going well.
Is your husband, Rhett, has he noticed anything? Has he made any comments, or is that dangerous territory?
Yes, he actually... Yeah, he does. He notices it in my boobs first because for some reason it's where I lose weight first.
Yeah.
It's
of course, because the world is evil, and nothing's fair.
I know. Why can't the fat go from my belly? Yeah. It's got to go from the only two things that I actually enjoy being round and full. But he always says that my boobs volunteer as tribute.
Oh, that's hilarious.
When I start a new eating plan. But aside from that, he's noticed it there. My waist, and I've also noticed it. He actually pointed it out to me. My waist, I used to be quite, if you go from under my arms to my hips, a straight line. Mm. If you look at me from the front, and if you look at me from the side, from right under my boobs to my hip bones, I had like a big round belly. So my midriff was kind of like straight up and down and round.
Right.
But it's now become indented.
Okay. You got that curve coming back.
On the sides. Yes, I've got my curve coming back, and I don't have a protruding belly anymore. I can now see, okay, there's a little roll at the top and a little roll at the bottom rather than one big bulge.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, and I can, my legs, I can see the muscles on my arms. I can see definition in my biceps. So it's as though there's some fat has gone, and I can actually see, oh, there are muscles there. My arms aren't just big because they're big.
Yeah, so overall, month one down, very happy with the results. And I don't know about you, I'm not like a MasterChef contestant. I find it hard to say things like I'm proud of myself, but I think I can admit that I'm pretty proud of myself. And looking forward to seeing what point five does. This week, we're not going to do Ozempic Johnsplained. We're not going to do any sciencey stuff. Today, we're going to do Controversy Corner. And in Controversy Corner, Charlene and I are going to talk about a big topic that we haven't yet really nailed down, which is stigma. There's a lot of stigma around the use of Ozempic and other GLP-1 drugs. Today, we're going to kind of unpack the different variations of stigma attached to Ozempic. Let's start with, you're just lazy. This is a shortcut. Ozempic is a shortcut to weight loss, and you should actually just eat better and exercise more. Otherwise, you're just going to bounce back. Charlene, what do you think about that one?
Look, I mean, I can't argue with the concept in principle, with that theory in principle, because if you look at what the medication does in your brain, it's essentially helping you to eat less. I'm a compulsive eater. Is basically what it boils down to. It's really just helping me not eat so much. It's just it's a control issue because I don't have control over saying, and I should have control over saying, no, thank you, I've had enough, or this tastes delicious, but I'm full. So it makes sense to me. But on the flip side of that is – not everybody has control issues. There are many people who are much larger than what I am or have been and have been for their entire lives, where it's not necessarily just I can't control myself when it comes to food issue.
Absolutely. There's genetic, hormonal, metabolic factors that for a lot of people are instrumental in obesity. And it's not really a case of, oh, just exercise more and eat less. Some people do that. And all that happens is that they have no energy, they feel terrible, and they bounce back. I think it's a fairly large category. So on one side, there's the medical thing that a lot of people are just predisposed. They have a set point weight, for example, or they have hormonal issues. And this especially, I think, happens, you know, maybe with children, maybe with age. It obviously gets worse. Everything gets worse as you get older. For those people, simply working out more is not going to work, right? And to say that, oh, well, then you should just die of diabetes seems to be kind of cruel to me. So I think that the people who are of the opinion that you should just work out more should go down the path of like, okay, but that doesn't work for everyone. So what now? Should they just be left, you know? And the other side of it, I think, is that we are not quite as bad as America, but we live in a food industrial complex where companies that, because we eat a lot of the same snacks that are, you know, pioneered in America, where they are designed to be addictive and designed to have an exact ratio of salt and fat and sugar to make them as tasty as possible, hyper palatable, beyond anything that normal food, you know, natural food has ever been. So we are literally in a kind of a stealth war between trying to be healthy and companies who are trying to addict us to food. And I've even seen a couple of videos about how food companies are now getting their R&D teams together to figure out how do we get around Ozempic. So they're trying to break through that, right? And that makes perfect sense because it's going to hurt their profits. Due to capitalism, we are now in that world. And if you want proof of that, just look at how much a pie costs versus how much a salad costs. And understand that for some people who don't have enough money to eat healthily, because eating healthily is more expensive, like they are trapped in a situation where they're not really given that much choice. And yes, Ozempic is expensive now, but it doesn't have to be, as we know. The fact that it costs $1,000 a month in America, but something like 69 euros in Spain, just shows that it's not the molecule, it's the companies behind them, right? So that was a rant, but yes, obesity is a chronic medical condition. It's got genetic, hormonal, and metabolic factors. It's not just a matter of willpower. And the same stigma exists around bariatric surgery.
I was just going to say, it got me thinking about that as well, because I had spoken to someone who had bariatric surgery, and prior to the surgery, I was just checking in to see how you're feeling about your upcoming surgery, da 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 da. And this person told me that, look, I'm just looking forward to, I know I'm going to have to be going through a lot, and I'm just looking forward to be able to live a more normal life. She says she's nervous to talk to just anybody about it because of the judgment and the stigma that comes with it. People are just so quick to judge, to say, oh, that's the easy way out. What are you putting your body through? Why don't you just eat better or exercise a little bit more? And the reality of the matter is that this particular person had been consulting for more than a year with a psychologist and a dietitian and the team of doctors that's going to do the surgery. And for this person to be able to lose all that weight, they would have to be on like something ridiculous, like 600 calorie intake a day just to lose weight. And aside from that, they'd have to exercise, but the body's so large that working out, you know, your knees would suffer. There's so much that would suffer because of the size. And I just think people are so quick to judge others, and it's so unnecessary. There is no easy way out. Whatever you're doing, either you're paying a lot of money for an expensive medication and you face judgment, or you have to go through surgery and the healing process and you know, everything that your body's going to go through to get to that point. If someone needs some help and they realize, I'm drawing a line in the sand here, I cannot do this anymore, and the only way I see my way out of this is to take this option, whatever option they choose, just let them Why are we so quick to judge people? And maybe I'm saying this from my point of view because I've opted for some help. I don't know. Why can't we just live and let live?
Like 100% agree. I think the only point of stigma, which is the next one we'll talk about, which has validity, is the diabetic conversation. Because GLP-1s were originally developed for helping diabetic patients stabilize their blood sugar and lose weight, which is a massive part of getting out of type 2 diabetes. And when it first was found out that, hey, Ozempic actually works for weight loss, suddenly it became this, you know, this very hot topic. And then fueled by the kind of Hollywood celebrity thing, it became kind of a race to Ozempic between diabetics and people who just wanted to use it for weight loss. And that said, some people who want to use it for weight loss are maybe borderline obese or about to be in that category, or they're pre-diabetic, or, you know, for example, both my mother and my father are diabetic. So, and my uncle is type 1 diabetic. So it's definitely in the family, right? But there are some people who were maybe just wanted to lose 5 kilograms. And I, like, on the spectrum of acceptance, that's where I start getting a bit like, okay, if there was infinite supply and everyone could have, then no problem. But especially in the early stages of Ozempic, there was a limited supply. And I do agree that it was not right that people are getting Ozempic when they don't need it for their survival, like diabetic patients. Of course, there's been this massive popularity of Ozempic. It's the production is being ramped up. The FDA in America allowed other laboratories to compound Ozempic and sell it, so in order to make up for the deficit. And we're now getting to a point where the supply and the demand are going to meet, right? So when we called around for prescriptions, more than half of the pharmacies that I called had stock or were expecting stock. There's the cost issue, which is, I think, separate from the supply issue, because, and also not something that anyone who wants to take Ozempic for weight loss can solve. Like, that is a global Novo Nordisk and other companies rapacious medical capitalism problem that I can't take responsibility for. So, yeah, I think that was an issue, and it now has become much less of an issue. And I think going forward, we're going to see much more kind of plentiful versions of this, and there's going to be no real supply issue. And I think that will go away.
If you think about just medications in general, over the years, so many medications have evolved into being prescribed for other conditions over time as the drug develops, and they realize that this, as research show, that this drug also shows benefits to X, Y, and Z, and can now also be prescribed in varying dosages for different conditions, even if the drug wasn't originally developed for that purpose. I get the issue with you're literally taking medication away from people who need it more than you. However, there isn't a short supply of Wellbutrin. And so it was easily prescribed for me. Yes, it was for my depression, which I was diagnosed with. However, it did help with the weight up to a point. So, and I do believe that as Ozempic and these GLP-1 drugs grow, we will be in a similar position in years to come when supply, it's already showing that supply is becoming less of an issue.
A good analogy to use here is creatine for 2 points. Number one is that creatine has been shown now to have mental benefits, to have all kind of benefits beyond its ability to help you push harder in exercise and recover faster and all that. So it's a kind of a wonder drug for gym warriors. That's great. But it also has all these other benefits. In fact, you know, my mother-in-law uses it because she's heading into her 70s. She's got a little bit of a fuzzy memory sometimes, and it's been recommended to her by her doctor for helping her keep her mental acuity and all that. So there's an example of like a drug that's meant for one thing, but has positive benefits in other worlds. Same is true of Ozempic and heart health. The second point about creatine is that in the 90s, when I was in school, a couple of guys at the all boys school I went to started taking creatine, and they were rugby players and athletes and all that. And they got ripped. They got stronger, and you could kind of see it. It was dramatic enough that we could see it. And it was all whispers and like, oh, they're taking creatine and they're on creatine. You know, like even that language of being on a drug or taking or using, you know, like heroin or something. So we used that language for it. And it was controversial at the time because people said, oh, it's not well studied and there might be these unintended consequences, all the things that people are saying about Ozempic. It's actually, just like semaglutide, one of the most studied drugs. There's plenty of research on it. There's a lot of hype around the side effects like nausea and all that. Usually, and for most people, not that bad, or as we've discovered, mostly very minimal or occasionally show up, but are not like a massive issue. And it's efficacious, it works. And then over the years, it's just become a thing that you can buy in, I can buy in Pick and Pay, like right now. You know, I can go to a supermarket and get creatine and no one cares about whether you use it or not. And I think that's where Ozempic is eventually going to go. It's going to become a supplement, because think of it as a supplement for weight loss. We've got all these fat burners that you can get in a supplement store or Pick and Pay, even things called like Nitrox pH and Super Burn and all that stuff. And they're all basically, well, most of them, I think, are a combination of caffeine and taurine, like Red Bull, and they make you sweat and they give you skin prickles and all that kind of craziness. And I've been on them before when I was doing like a gym mission many, many years ago, and it was quite unpleasant. So if you look at the evolution of creatine into a completely normalized drug, and I think Ozempic is going to follow the same track. You know, we've covered weight loss and the easy way out stigma. We've covered supply and demand and the diabetic thing. Another kind of stigma is the idea of addiction transfer and long-term concerns. So a lot of people say, well, you have to take it for the rest of your life, or you're going to bounce back as soon as you get off it. We're going to test that. We're going to find out by the end of this project. We'll probably do a check-in a few months after we've stopped taking Ozempic and see what's happened. The literature seems to point to the fact that you do bounce back, but nowhere near to where you started. So you might have a bounce back, but we're certainly not going to be taking it for the rest of our lives because I can't afford to. It'll be interesting, but I don't think it is. If the literature was that everyone who stops taking Ozempic goes back to their starting weight, no one would be using it.
That
would be the headline.
So that I do agree with. And there's so much sensationalism around this medication. Majority of which we've actually debunked already. A lot of it's false. It's just sensationalism. It's to hype people up. And if anybody goes into this process of getting the help and understanding that, for example, just going back to bariatric surgery, you have the surgery, but you have to understand that after the surgery and your recovery, when your recovery is complete, you have to understand that there are certain things that you're going to have to do for the rest of your life to ensure that you remain healthy. Okay. With bariatric surgery, from what I understand, it's quite complicated. There's a certain amount of vitamins and supplements that you have to take every day for the rest of your life because your body no longer absorbs those vitamins and minerals from the food that you take in. Also, following a high protein diet and again, recommended creatine because of the absorption issue in your body. So I think if you go on this journey, and this is really your and my goal here is to be very cognizant of what we're learning about ourselves and our eating habits through this process. What are we learning about our energy levels and maintaining an exercise regime whilst watching what we're eating? And what are we learning in terms of portion size, what time of day we eat, and what types of food we consume and how it makes us feel? So yes, I do anticipate that it will probably be a bit harder for me once I taper down and I no longer use the help of Ozempic. But I'm very cognizant. I've become very cognizant, and it's actually been such a pleasure to not have to worry about I eat my whole meal and then afterwards I feel it happened once this week because we've gone up in the dosage where I ate what I would normally eat or what I have normally been eating since starting Ozempic, and it was too much, and I didn't realize it until it was too late because it was like 20 minutes after I'd eaten and I felt so ill. I had to take anti-nausea medication and lay down, and while I was lying down, I was like, okay, what have I done differently here? Why is this happening? And I realized there was a point while I was eating that I actually felt comfortably full, but I had like two or three more bites left on my plate and I was not concentrating. We were watching a program and I just finished my food and took my plate to the kitchen. So if I'd eaten a little bit slower and I was more aware of what I was eating and how much I was eating, I wouldn't have gotten to that point. And the thing is, without Ozempic, I'm going to have to be much more mindful about that in my normal life because I won't get that feeling so quickly. So I'm trying to remember my portion sizes and to tell myself, this is normally at the point where you are full, Charlene. So leave the food, give it 20 minutes and see how you feel.
Absolutely. One more kind of element of stigma that I do want to talk about, but I think we'll leave that to maybe the next episode or the one after. Here's the cliffhanger. Is body positivity a lie? Because given the opportunity to... What I'd also like to do is I think we'll try and get, there is an influencer named FitGirlZA on Instagram. She's actually the wife of one of our podcasters in the South African Podcasters Guild. Her name's Tracy, and she's a bariatric surgery kind of proponent because she's had it and she now does triathlons, I believe. And I'd love to have a conversation about with her about bariatric surgery and the comparison to Ozempic and what she's experienced because she's been doing this a lot longer than we.
Yeah, I think it'll be super interesting because also to chat to a person who has had that experience, you know, it'll be so insightful for listeners. And I think we need to have these conversations because in order to just to get rid of the stigma, we need to just be more open and honest about the resources, the various kinds of resources of help that people can ask for or accept or choose to use.
Sure. Yeah. But that is it for the controversy corner. That is 1 month down. And as Charlene has mentioned, we are now on a higher dose of Ozempic and we've got interesting results coming up for you in the forthcoming weeks. So stay tuned. Got a little secret for you, just a little thing to take away. Just remember that Charlene and I are podcasters, not doctors. So none of this is medical advice, and we're not recommending that you take Ozempic or don't take Ozempic or take it in a certain way or any of that stuff. So, podcasters, not doctors.